All right, Common Sense Ohio, August 13, 2025. Texas is coming to Ohio. Putin is coming to the United States, and D.C. is in the comics. The world is on its ear. We're going to explain it all, that and much, much more. CommonSenseOhioShow.com. Check us out. It's a neat little website. You can send us a question. You can send us a topic. Norm will cover it. Or if you just want to take on Norm in a debate, I dare you. online or elsewhere, he's happy to oblige. Trust me, I know, personal. Brett, not here today, but the show must go on. Fact of the day. So those who know, I do a this day in history. And I pick two things today. One, because it's sort of my youth, my comeuppance, Fast Times at Ridgemont High debuted today in 1982. August 13, 1982, Fast Time at Ridgemont High. Cameron Crowe film, I guess, wrote it and created it. It's funny. I thought about this. There's so much cultural stuff that came from this movie.
Oh yeah.
But then I went back and watched it at one point when I thought my kids were old enough to watch it. I realized that they weren't. I mean, if you see what's in that movie,
yeah,
it is insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from abortion.
Oh.
To
it's nuts.
I mean, it is to drug use.
Yeah.
Skipping school. I mean, it is. But done sort of tastefully, I guess, is in a weird way. It's like you have teen sex with like an older guy. I mean, how do I say that's done taste? I don't know. But I got to thinking about this a little bit and how that has informed our, you know, that was back in the 80s. So we were coming off the 70s. I was a young man in the 70s or a young boy in the 70s. But that was in the 80s. And that sort of really informed the culture going forward. You know?
It did. Madonna was just getting going. And
sort of the excess of the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of turbulent at that point in time. I don't think the boom economy had quite taken hold yet.
Not quite. But it was coming.
It was coming.
And it was just sort of this free and loose, enjoy party style of the 80s.
Yep.
That then was dashed by AIDS and some other stuff that sort of happened. So, you know, it was like all this teen sex was going on and craziness going on and all this. I don't know if it was good or bad. And I'm sure somebody smarter than I has sort of tried to connect the dots here about where were we then and where are we now and how did all this happen? You know, it really was it sort of mainstreamed all these things.
No internet yet, really. You know, and the personal computer wasn't really, you know, hadn't taken the world by storm yet.
You probably had your Apple II.
Yeah, at the most.
Or maybe your TRS-80.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing that happened, I think more significant, and I believe last week, August 6th, was the anniversary of the bomb. But today, the Manhattan, in 1942 today, the government started the Manhattan Project to create the bomb. That 3 years later, think what they did in 3 years. 3 years later, they were able to drop two different types of bombs. And so, you know, that here we are.
The same general that was put in charge of the Manhattan Project also built the entire Pentagon in like 6 months. I mean, think of that.
Isn't it crazy how, like, if you think about that, we went from nothing in the 30s to a completely, fully operational Death Star. And I think that's what a lot of people, we used to talk about World War II a lot here, but a lot of people don't understand, or didn't, maybe at the time, didn't understand the force of nature they awakened with the United States, like with our manufacturing capacity, our just the human capacity, like our human resources.
We were called the arsenal of democracy.
Yeah.
The United States. And part of this, you know, can-do spirit that Americans really embraced, that really took us up through the space program and put men on the moon, was this idea that America, if it put its mind to it, could do anything and could do
exceptional
it.
Exceptional is the
word.
And
could do it fast.
Exceptional is the word. And for those of you who don't think so, go study the history. See what we did. Because it's not like we conquered the world in World War II. It's like we did not conquer the world in World War II, and we could have.
Yeah.
At least maybe the Soviets would have something to say about that at the time, but I think we could have.
I mean, there were people alive, right? This is the thing that blows me away. There were people alive when Neil Armstrong stepped out on the moon that had been born before there were cars.
Okay. Yeah, isn't that incredible?
Before there were cars, much less airplanes. And then in 1969, think of it, you're a 100-year-old guy, you're born in 1869, right? Think of that.
Think about that. Like, what's your grandmother? My grandmother was born in 04, 1904, I think. And, you know, the transition that she saw in her lifetime was nothing short of incredible. And I don't think it's the same now. You could maybe say the same. We were just talking about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. There was no computers. There was no never. But we still had little handheld games, and we still had, you know.
Yeah.
We had stuff you could plug in and stuff you could use, and life had become sort of simplified by appliances and washing machines, everything else.
Yeah.
But, like, these people lived through a complete transformation.
Change. Yes, complete.
Of the world that, you know, culminates in people walking on the moon. Really nothing short of incredible, and because of United States American exceptionalism.
So that Manhattan Project that you're talking about, that they started, you know, today, that in 1942, so up in Chicago, like underneath, I think it was a basketball court or something, they took the first steps of splitting atoms.
Yeah.
Like underneath a university basketball court.
Isn't it incredible? And
I mean, it's just, and look, wild.
And just so those who know, like, others were trying to do this.
Yeah.
Right? We got word that the Germans were on this.
Right.
We got word that the Japanese were on this.
Right.
So it's like, if we didn't do it, somebody was going to do it.
For sure.
And we wielded this power in a way that did not, that was not designed to conquer the world,
right?
But to end the conflict that we didn't start, by the way.
No,
right? That we didn't kill the millions of people that the Germans killed, that the Japanese killed,
right?
And obviously later that the or during all that
they industrialized, you know, death camps. Like, I mean, they were factories of death.
Right. So look, I mean, somebody had to do something about it. So
yeah,
why not us? All right. Well, look. Lots going on. Norm, you want to talk about the DC takeover? And I'm not talking about the DC comics here. But there is some interesting, you know, I actually had to go back and brush up on this, but go ahead.
Well, wasn't Superman a DC character?
I think Superman, I think he was. I don't know who all the DC character was, but just put Trump on that face now.
Yeah. So,
imagine Trump wearing was Batman DC or was he?
I'm not sure, but
we should probably look that up.
Like Jim Croce said, you know, you don't put on Superman's cape. So I guess Trump is trying to do that, and probably successful.
Yeah,
so
here
far.
We go. We got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and the Green Lantern. Hold on, there's even more. These are the ones I know.
Superman was invented in Cleveland, by the way. The guys who came up with Superman were Ohioans.
The Flash, Aquaman, then they got a bunch of people. They added to it later. But
so I mean, you know, I guess the latest Clark Kent is Donald Trump.
Yeah, so, I don't know who Wonder Woman is, but anyway, the DC takeover. So there's some interesting history here. You want to kick it off?
Yeah. So back in 1973, probably as a reaction to the Vietnam protests that pretty much swarmed over DC, took over the mall, you know, that Congress decided to give DC some home rule ability to control, you know, its own government and, you know, but still have some strings to bring it back under federal control if necessary. You know, if civic order was lost, that somehow there would be a mechanism for the president and the federal government to grab back control. So Donald Trump, as president today, these days, a few days ago, implemented that. And what he gets is 48 hours of control over the police, direct control as the president over the local PD, for 48 hours, and then after 48 hours, he gets to extend that on his own initiative for a total of 30 days, and then the law calls for Congress. So his power runs out after a month, 30 days, and then if it goes beyond that, Congress has to sanction it.
Yeah, and the reason Congress has the control here is because if you dial back the clock to that pesky document that those who want to get things done because they think they can or
right.
that always gets in the way. The United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, basically laid the foundation for the creation of a district that would house the federal government. And, you know, it granted, I think it was like 10 miles square, separate from any existing state. And the idea here was that we didn't want the federal government to sit under the jurisdiction of a state. Right. And, you know, for all sorts of reasons, right? The federal government had to be independent of a state, and, you know, you didn't want to have Virginia or Maryland or one of these other states ostensibly having more power than the other states, because then the people would have gotten their panties in a bunch about that.
And back then, Steve, as we know, you know, from our history, federalism and what all that philosophy entails, the states were really way more powerful than the federal government. All the rights and powers were reserved to the states, other than the few things that were in the That's Constitution. Right. And That's now right. it's flipped. Now the federal government has all – they've really opened up what the Supremacy Clause means. And federal government is way more powerful now than it was at that time.
Yeah. So 1790, we created D.C. And just to give you – I guess we can put a little color to that history. The for the longest time, I mean, there was – even in the time of maybe your grandfather's life, Norm, going to a different state meant something.
Oh, yeah.
Going to a different state was – I don't want to say it's like going to a different country. It wasn't quite that, but you go to a different state and – it wasn't so homogenized where the highway system didn't exist. You're going on different roads. You're on different names. It was just a little bit different.
Yep.
And if you turn back the clock even further, you know, you have FDR gets sort of, he goes through the Depression and he creates what he calls the New Deal. And basically the New Deal was fascism, right? He wanted to take over the means of the economic production and sort of top-down control over the economy. And the U.S. Supreme Court for the longest time says, no, you can't do that. The federal government doesn't have power to do it.
Yeah.
You can try all you want to regulate Jim Bob on the farm and tell him what he can grow and what he can't grow. But sorry, FDR, you don't have authority to do it.
Yeah.
Then
FDR says, I'll pack says, the court.
I don't like you. I don't like you, justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. So I'm going to add more.
Yeah.
And guess what? The ones I'm going to add are New Dealers who are going to vote my way. And then all of a sudden we have this concept or this slogan that's emerged, a stitch in time, save nine.
Yeah.
And what that means is the Supreme Court miraculously does an about face, says, oh, we were wrong. We were wrong. It turns out under the Commerce Clause, which gives Congress the power to regulate interstate commerce, the New Deal or the president can or Congress can pass laws under the New Deal that are now miraculously constitutional.
Yeah.
And what that was is so the Commerce Clause basically was this limitless bucket of power for Congress to regulate the states.
Yeah.
And you know, careful what you wish for, because now we've created that's what basically fueled what we now see as this modern megalith of the federal government.
The swamp,
right? I mean, and then, you know, if you couple that with the administrative state of government that came along with the New Deal that was actually started by, was it Woody Wilson? But anyway, we now we have this sort of Leviathan, to quote Hobbes, a government that you can't get rid of.
What they say is, like, you accidentally probably break a couple laws every day, and you have no idea.
You don't even know it, right?
Because there's all these regulations and things. Just starting your car and commuting to work, you've probably broken a law or two, and you have no idea that you did. Like, you refilled your lawnmower gas can the wrong way, or bought the wrong light bulbs.
Can we just talk about gas cans for a second? Because those damn the safety ones, you can't dump them. Anyway.
Yeah. Insane.
But this has parallels to what's going on today, because now we have, you know, back when Biden was running and right before, or in Trump's last presidency, you started to hear rumblings about packing the court again, and ironically, somehow magically waving your wand over D.C. and making it a state.
Yeah,
because then you'd get two more senators.
Yep.
And you'd get a couple of probably representatives.
Yep,
and then doing the same thing with Puerto Rico.
Yep,
and
away you go.
Whoever does that, if they're and it would be the Dems here, because they would presume that D.C. would vote Democratic.
Sure,
and they would presume that if they're the ones packing the court, then the judges
game over.
It's game over. It's a fait accompli.
Yeah.
And look, if you believe in that, everything that side is doing, you're probably saying hooray. Except guess what? It always comes back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
We have checks and balances on power for a reason. The federal government was intended to be inefficient for a reason.
Yeah.
It was not supposed to be able to get everything done that everybody wanted. It was supposed to be quite the opposite.
Right.
And when, you know, we're talking about budgets these days, we're talking about government spending these days, we're talking about all this stuff, But when in our lifetimes, when the government worked, the federal government worked the best, it was when Slick Willie was president and he didn't have Congress and he had to negotiate. And yet we balanced the budget.
Right.
Because they couldn't spend all, they couldn't do whatever they wanted.
And the way this happens is, you know, the way we lose our rights, if you will, because that's really what we're talking about. The way we lose our rights is we give up a little, we give up our rights in exchange for what we perceive as security. So a little at a time, it happens incrementally, like boiling a frog. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, like somebody sees what they perceive as an injustice, I don't know, in Arkansas or Montana or someplace. And then they go, well, why is that law so backwards? Like, you know, like maybe it allows corporal punishment in public schools or something. So somebody in Pennsylvania or New York or Connecticut looks at what Montana does and goes, oh, that's horrible. That's wrong. We disagree with that. So we need to pass national legislation to prevent that and make all 50 states comply with one, you know, philosophy or one view of how things should be. And then you issue by issue by issue, whether it's car bumper height, whether it's discipline in a school, whether it's, you know, building a pond on your land, whatever it is, we start homogenizing, as Steve mentioned, where every state has to be the same. And then before you know it, the whole argument for separate statehoods almost evaporates.
Well, we should talk about the argument for separate statehoods, because it's not just that that's... I guess that sort of demands us to ever, you're asking the next question, which is why do we care?
Yeah.
And I think that's an important question.
Yeah.
We care because we are different. So we talk about the American melting pot. We talk about the American, you know, we're based on diversity. And I'm using these terms in the truest sense.
In the truest sense.
That means that your American brother that lives in Massachusetts is going to be different than your American brother that lives in Texas.
Yeah.
And not just different, but like a different lived experience.
Yeah.
You know, Texas isn't going to have the same winters as Massachusetts. Just, no. The weather is different. Our country is huge. And the people have different interests. And the freedom is, the very freedom we're fighting to protect, this, quote, democracy everybody's worried about, is the freedom to do what you want to do.
Exactly. Right.
And live the experience that you want to live
right.
within a certain framework. And if you try to make the people in Texas live like the people in Massachusetts, it's not fair to either.
No.
It's just not.
No.
And, you know, so right now everybody talks about the coastals, you know, and the coastal elites, and that's what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
They have decided that they know best.
Yeah.
And they're going to cram all this down.
Yeah.
And the people have basically, I think at this point, stood up on their hind legs and said, enough's enough. And I think enough's now enough. We have Trump, and that's what they got for that. They got their worst enemy. It's sort of like in, what's another movie reference? Ghostbusters. Conjure up your biggest fear, and it was the Stave Puft Marshmallow. So they got Trump. You know, the people conjured up the biggest fear of the other side, and it was the Stave Puft Marshmallow Man. And it's Trump, and he's basically saying, "No, you can't do it." And we're trying to dismantle, and he's dismantling this, or he's at least trying.
That is a great scene. They're telling Rick Moranis, "No, don't think of it. Don't think of that thing," and then he thinks of it. It's just, it's beautiful. Well. Yeah.
It was Dan Aykroyd.
It was Aykroyd. Yeah. Don't think of it, man.
Yeah. That's,
but I think like culturally a good example of this, like this is a micro example. It's almost not important. But, you know, like when Kristi Noem was getting, you know, approved as Secretary of Homeland Security, it came out that she had shot a dog, right, on her ranch. You know, had put down a dog with a rifle or something because a dog would not behave. And
it wouldn't hunt.
It was untrainable. Well, that's how they do things out there, right? Right? Like that's not, but people in maybe say, I don't know, New Jersey or
New
York.
They have no concept of
that. They flipped out over that. And it's like, you just don't live that life. You don't, or Sarah Palin up in Alaska, nobody understood her life. Well, you're not in Alaska. You don't know what's going on up
and
there.
And just like Sarah Palin
it alone.
Or Kristi Noem is not going to go to Jersey and understand how those people drive.
Right.
I'm just kidding. But look, if you go to New York and you go to Jersey and you go to some of these coastal cities, like in the Midwest, they use a different language. They talk a different way.
Yeah.
They're far more aggressively confrontational than we are here.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You get to be that way. But imagine if we started passing laws trying to prevent that.
Right.
Right. the beauty of the federalist system is that it allows both to exist in harmony. At the same time, it's not, they're different.
Yeah.
It's right. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And we come together for certain values that we think are important, and that is our freedom to be different. And these people want to make it all the same.
And it's expressed in the Constitution with things like common defense. Okay. That's where the Constitution's trying to describe what the state should have in common. And it's pretty limited.
Yeah.
I mean, the original plan, right? And we've lost the plot now. And so this particular administration is trying to claw back. It's kind of funny because they accuse him of being Hitler and a power concentrator, and he's actually disgorging power. Like, if you get rid of the Department of Education, what does that mean? That means you're giving the power to oversee education policy back to the states and the local school systems. If you eliminate the top-down force from D.C., you're giving up power. And yet people accuse him of being an amalgamator of power. And I think this administration is being totally misrepresented in the legacy media. I mean, they don't want to talk about the truth. They want to just, they hate him so much that like in this D.C. takeover thing, oddly enough, and maybe not even by design, Trump has forced the Democrats to become pro-crime. So what they're doing is saying there's not really a crime problem in D.C. So I'm watching CNN last night, and they have an ABC anchor, a female, who said she was sexually assaulted by a guy who was let out five times by the D.C., the lower court, you know, criminal court system in D.C. Let this guy out five times, he, recidivist sexual assaulter. And he assaulted her. And she's saying she doesn't feel safe on the subway system, at the park and rides, on the bike trails. None of this stuff feels safe to her after being assaulted, right? And she is saying there is a crime problem. And yet the Democrats are trying, you know, Hakeem Jeffries, hey, Trump should not be doing this because we don't really have a crime problem. I mean, so basically they're saying, We're pro-criminal in effect.
Well,
how can you not say?
It exposes what they really are, right? It's really just no matter what Trump says, they're opposed to it.
They're opposed to it. And knee-jerk reaction.
It puts them into it. There's an old logical fallacy called, I think it's reductio ad absurdity, reduced to absurdity.
Yes.
And the idea is you take the other side's argument and you reduce it to its absurd nature. And this Trump is sort of doing that, right? Like he's calling their... how can you possibly feel that there's not a crime problem? Or are you just opposing me because it's me?
Yeah.
And now, look, I at the same time will say, I will watch carefully to see if Trump exceeds the federal authority or the executive authority here.
Absolutely.
Of the act.
Absolutely.
Because at the same time, I appreciate what Trump's trying to do. I also am very cautious and critical of power grabs by the executive branch, particularly because we don't have a king.
No.
We have an executive branch, and really it was almost intended by design to be the weakest of the three branches.
Exactly. It used to be. Yes.
It was too weak when it first started or when we first created it. But so we got to be very mindful of that. And here's the problem that we've run into, and it's all, and we can move on, but because of what we're talking about, because of this administrative swamp that we've created, Congress doesn't do its damn job anymore. And Congress's job was to pass laws and do things.
Yeah.
And instead, it delegates everything to these administrative agencies, which, guess what, sit under the hat of the executive branch of government. So we've blurred the lines of the balance of powers, and this is what we get.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody could wave their magic wand and get rid of, and Trump tried, I don't think he's going to be successful, but if you could wave your wand and get rid of these executive or these huge, meaningless executive swamp agencies, I think there'd be a learning curve.
Yeah.
And there would be a little bit of a hurdle to get over.
Yeah.
But it'd be smooth sailing after that.
Well, like the Corporation of Public Broadcasting is all rolled up now, right? They got defunded. So they don't have federal money to dole out to
guess what? Create public content that people like and go sell advertising.
Well, that's what Brett said on our show last week. Is like, you know, one door shuts, another door opens. So now go out and be, you know, go out and sell advertising.
Yeah.
You know, people are still going to want to watch Sesame Street for their little kids.
That's right.
Or This Old House or whatever the program is.
Right.
So just go get
your sponsors and do it. Look, you know, life sucks, man. It's all of a sudden it's hard for you. Now you have to do what everybody else does. Sorry.
This show is not subsidized by the government. Why should that show be? I mean,
that's
of
a good point.
We could talk about Intel, or we could talk about, you know, Solyndra. We could talk about a lot of different industries. And the idea that the federal government picks winners and losers, or Jobs Ohio here in Ohio decides to fund Intel or Anduril or some meat processing company, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, why they're picking one and not the other.
When the government puts its thumb on the scale, it throws everything out of whack.
It throws everything out of whack.
And I can imagine what those supporters of NPR and its content would say if the government were giving this show money.
Right.
And I wouldn't fault you because we shouldn't. The government should not be sponsoring this. This is political content.
Yeah.
This would be, to me, it's akin to content-based regulation. When you're giving one content money and not giving everybody else money, then you're basically regulating the others by supporting one. And the only solution to that is do none, because you can't give everybody money.
Yeah.
Right. The only solution is do none.
Look how the elite universities have freaked out over Trump, you know, pulling back on these grants to places like Yale and Harvard and Princeton. They are now settling all of these issues about anti-Semitism and things like that because of the strings. The federal government has these strings into these universities. And of course, it was always a one-way thing. Everybody was happy to just throw money at him. And then when he threatens to withdraw the money, it kind of shows how you can change their behavior because they're addicted to that federal funding.
That's right. And look, if it were necessary, if it were needed, then the market will provide it.
Yeah.
It just does. It's not easy and it's not hard. It's a harder road for sure than having something given to you.
Right.
But when's the last time you got something for free that was actually that great?
Yeah, right.
I mean, really.
No such thing as a free lunch, really.
So, all right. What's going on in Ohio?
Well, yeah. So in Ohio, I'm dubbing this, the Cincinnati Six. So they, you know, I think in order to calm down the city, because that city is on a bubble, that city could go one of two ways. And the local FOP and some of the people down there that are involved in law enforcement have said, this city is teetering. It could go full donut hole like Columbus is sort of undergoing, where people are emptying out the city center. You know, like we're trying to, in Columbus, for example, have the Short North, where people invest millions of dollars into condos and bringing back these old mansions and homes. And if that doesn't work, okay, we'll hollow out the downtown like Cleveland has done. And then people go to the suburbs and you create this donut hole. Well, that's going on in Cincinnati. Downtown, they don't have the shopping. They don't have the nightlife like they used to have, say, 30, 40 years ago. In spite of things like the Over the Rhine having the casino and, you know, some of the microbrews and stuff, when people are getting beat up and assaulted in the Over the Rhine.
In a festival. I mean, it was a public, I mean, it wasn't like they didn't venture into some dangerous place. I mean, this was a public place.
And what has come out is that at 2 or 3 in the morning when all that went down, there were only 2 Cincinnati police officers on duty downtown. Two guys. You got to be kidding me. In a major U.S. city, that's it. So if we hear in Columbus that we're 400-500 police officers down when we've had guests on the show, like It's very, and Cincinnati is said to be 300 or 400 down, according to
Senator.
Well,
and it makes a difference.
It makes a difference.
I've had look. I'm gonna. I hate anecdotal evidence, but I love it.
Yeah.
So let's talk some anecdotal evidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
My son was in a crash. Okay. Nobody was hurt. It was a fender bender in a parking lot type of thing, and I wasn't there. And you know, he called me and said, "Dad, what do I do?" I said, "We call the police." Well, I did. And they just said, they're not coming.
Oh,
and I get it. It's not an injury accident, but it never used to be that way.
No.
Like a patrolman would be there to take a report, and that helps somebody like a teenager deal with a problem where there's an adult on the other side saying, no, you're a teen driver. It's your fault. And maybe, you know, I'm not taking sides here, but it's like just something as simple as that.
Absolutely.
I don't ever remember having to deal with that.
Yeah.
Except for you would hear that on the news sometimes during snow emergencies, reports only, don't call the police. They're busy doing other things unless it's an injury. But now that's the policy.
It's a policy.
Across the board.
And you can get rolled very easily. There's a lot of people that, you know, they say exchange information. Well, when it's just voluntary and some guy says, okay, my name is Joe Smith.
F you, bye bye.
Yeah, I'm Joe Smith. I live at 123 USA Street, Columbus, Ohio. And then they say, bye, kid.
Yep.
Okay. And that's it. You're no ticket, no report.
So we end up in this weird, but this pushes us into places we don't like. This pushes us into bad places.
Yeah.
So people are getting dash cams. People are like, this promotes road rage and vigilantism.
It kind of does.
So if if somebody hit your car and they say it was your fault, and I say, no, it was my fault or your fault, my fault, your fault, my fault, your fault,
right.
My fault. So somebody's chasing somebody down and saying, look, you're supposed to give me, screw you, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Think where this goes. And look, you just heard me rail against government intervention and things, but this is what the government's supposed to do.
Well, right. This is like the basic function.
This is the
retail safety where the rubber meets the road.
Right. Basic infrastructure, safety. And I notice it around Columbus in the street. Like, is this what's happening in Cincy? It's happening in Columbus.
It is. It's a wild west.
We had somebody walk into the building, wander around, and take what they wanted.
Yeah,
during business hours.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that never happened before.
No.
Not in this city.
No.
Not in this city. And it's
and the employees at stores now get in trouble if they try to intervene.
Yeah.
Like, they're the bad guys.
Well,
so
right.
Somebody goes up to a shoplifter and says, hey, I got to call my manager. You stay right here.
So what's the cost, right? You know, what's the cost?
Yeah.
Here's the cost. I called out the security company. And it's costing me thousands of dollars more to install additional security that regulates access to the building. And there's an additional cost to that. So now if somebody wants to come see somebody in my building on the second floor, it's a headache. You can't just come in and go up and knock on their door and say, I'm here to do commerce with you.
Right.
Instead, it's like, you know, you feel like you're buzzing into a jail.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to those trying to do business in a city.
Right.
It's just not fair.
Right.
And if I tried to call the police on that situation, they didn't come. They won't come.
Yeah.
Whatever. We're not going to take a report.
It makes things very harsh. You know, last night, for example, I'm out in Mount Vernon. I'm out in the boonies visiting a friend. And hey, they leave their car. I mean, they leave their car keys in the ignition. Like there's people who park in their driveway out in farm country, and they just, their doors are unlocked at night. You know, the dogs come in and out at all hours. The keys are in the cars. And it's a completely different way. You're not living your life paranoid. And, you know, that's part of why people are emptying out of the central cities, is because they're not allowed to assert their rights as homeowners, as property owners, as renters. They're being victimized, and basically, you know, the local infrastructure is piled up against them and is more interested in preserving the rights of the perpetrators, and or at least that's the way it feels. And so people are like, well, gosh, if I can't defend as a homeowner or as a renter, if I can't stand my ground, or if I can't, you know, if I have to worry constantly about my wife when she parks outside of my home, walking to the front door, you know, and that 20-foot walk becomes an exposure that's unacceptable, people are going to move.
They're going to move. Right. So look, we are, and this is relevant. I want to cover one more branch of this little topic, and then we'll move on. But this is relevant to what's going on in New York City. So New York City is about to elect.
Oh my gosh!
In the bastion of capitalism, and free trade and free markets.
Yes.
A communist.
The largest city in America.
I'm not adding. This is not my label. He is a communist. He is a stated communist.
Straight up.
He is yeah. advocating for the government takeover of all commerce and business and property. I mean, this is communism. So what's going to happen in New York City? It's already happened, but now it's going to be like the final cut. Everybody's going to leave. And, you know, I don't know what's going to, you know, I don't know where this goes. Is the heart of commerce for the world going to move to Florida? It might.
It might.
It might. Or at least it'll be all remote.
Or know? Even out of America. To Geneva?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know.
Like,
right?
I guess you're right. One door closed, another open. Somebody's going to see opportunity here.
Big
because
time.
You can't just tell people you now owe 85% of your income to the government. People are going to leave.
Yeah.
They're going to leave. You can't just tell people we're going to take over the housing. Well, guess what? The last time the government controlled like high-rise buildings and did all the maintenance and control of that, they can't do it. Yeah. They don't know how to do it.
Have you heard of Cabrini Green in Chicago, right? Which is now like an empty field. That was the government's idea of public housing.
It never worked.
And it just became like a center of murder. Like people are getting killed every day at Cabrini Green. They finally had to just destroy the building.
Here, even in Columbus, this has happened. So the when the government employs things like rent control, you're telling private property owners that they can't charge the rent that they need. And what you're really saying is, we don't care what your expenses are, Mr.
Yep,
private property
right.
owner, to maintain this property. We don't care what your expenses are to right. provide a habitable dwelling.
Right.
We're just going to tell you that rent is X. I don't care.
Right.
And the reason the government doesn't care is because it doesn't even know. It has no concept of what it takes to maintain something because they've got an endless bucket of money in their own property, so they just do whatever they want. But on the private side, what happens? A, it either goes to crapola.
Yeah.
Or B, they stop renting to people.
Yeah.
And they just sit.
Or C, there's a black market and people lie and say they start subleasing. You know, like a guy, he gets a rent control price. And every time a new renter moves in, there's an incremental increase that they're allowed to do under the law. So what they do in order to dodge that, let's say I graduate from, you know, some university in New York City. So I'm going to leave. What I do is I advertise my rent control apartment is available on the student bulletin board. And then under my name, a new person just moves in.
Right.
And so the rent never goes up. Like, you know, the same person is ostensibly still renting it after 20 years, but they moved out 16 years ago. But yep. their name is still on the contract. And every subsequent renter moves in under that name. So people start playing these kind of games. And the landlord never gets to increase their rent.
And so what do? They sell. And who are they selling to? The outside investors.
Yeah.
They're just going to come in and they don't care because they got enough money. They don't need to rent it. They're going to sit on it. Or they'll think, all right, well, look, the property values are so low here. I'm going to go buy that apartment in New York City.
Yeah.
And I'll just use it as my little vacation. In fact, why don't I buy two? I'll buy one for my buddy Norm. And that way we have a place to stay when we go visit New York City.
Yeah.
And that's what, and what does that do?
Yeah.
So that decreases the supply of rentable habitation, and then that screws up the rent market even more because there's fewer apartments to rent or fewer houses to rent, and that increases the price, except the prices are frozen. So it's just like, this is my woodworker analogy. Anybody who's done, you've heard me say this.
Like, yes.
Anybody who's tried to build a picture frame with perfect 45s and it's a little bit off, so you think, I'm just going to shave this one a little bit. Well, then when you get to the third one or the second one, that's off. Or certainly by the time you get to the end,
right.
it's totally off. It's off by a quarter inch.
Then the picture won't fit in the frame
and then
anymore.
You have to shrink it and say, I'll just make it a little bit smaller. And then pretty soon you don't have a mat, and then pretty soon you don't have anything. You can't do it. It's an endless problem.
Yeah. And we saw this during the illegals being put up in the hotels in New York City.
That's right.
All of a sudden, conventions that had booked blocks of rooms for huge money-making conventions for New York City, right? You're going to have, I don't know, you're going to have all these Shriners come to New York City and they're going to rent 2,000 rooms. Well, they call to the hotel to make reservations and they go, oh, those blocks have now been taken by the city council of illegals are living in
and
these.
Think what that does then. So then the hotels that don't have that, the prices skyrocket.
Skyrocket.
So people don't go.
And they cancel conventions.
And then they don't spend money. They don't have conventions. Like, you can't just do this, folks. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
All right. So more Ohio on the sports side, Norm.
Yeah.
Texas is coming. Arch Manning is coming to the horseshoe at noon, which sort of pissed everybody off here in the state.
High noon, man.
At high noon in the shoe. Texas, Ohio State, week one, which, look, I'm a football fan. I played football. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love this for the community.
It's a great sport.
And, you know, Ohio State's done, some of the stuff they're trying to do, I think, is sort of foolish, but they're giving away towels now, or, like, they're trying to create their own version of the terrible towel.
Yeah.
They're trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do here, but I don't think it's going to work. I will voice my criticism and then my support. My criticism is, one of the things about Ohio State football is this, and everybody says it, but we mean it, darn it, tradition. Like, you know, Ohio State's one of the original schools. It's huge. It has a tradition about it. You still see the old geezers in their tailgates coming up. And and I say geezer in a very, my dad used to use that in a...
dressed up as molecules or whatever. They look crazy.
Use that in a very affectionate way.
Yeah.
I mean, the old folks who went to school there, it's like the tradition of Ohio State football, it hasn't really changed. We didn't do all the crazy stuff. Now, look, Ohio State fans have their problems. We have our sores. They get out of control sometimes and they burn dumpsters, but hopefully that's under control. But anyway, I think what Ohio State's doing is artificially trying to create something different, and it doesn't work that way. So don't try. It's not going to work. But doesn't mean we're not going to beat Texas. Arch Manning coming in. Julian San, I think, is announced as a quarterback. I will see for Ohio State. But a huge game. I love this. I love seeing.
I hear that Brian Day is still doing his little head fake.
Ryan Day. You can't say it. Don't screw it up, but not on our show. No.
Ryan Day still doing his little head fake and is talking about this Lincoln kid.
Keenholz.
As possibly going to be the starter. But we know he's not. But I think he's trying to get Texas to get prepared for two different styles of quarterbacks throw in a little bit of confusion at them. But I don't think it's working.
It looks like Ohio State's favored, at least marginally. But we'll see. I guess
we'll see.
Texas finds itself a 2.5 underdog, and this is the other thing: the bet, like with this ubiquitous sports betting now, it's like it changes every day. But
and the NIL thing—they got to get that under control.
Yeah, who's bought the best team? I don't know. We'll find out, I guess, on August 30 when that game goes down here in the horseshoe.
So we have all seen, you know, Friday Night Lights. That's a great movie. You know, I'm not talking about the TV series, but the original one with Billy Bob Thornton as a coach. That's based on a true story. That's real, you know. Like that all happened, you know. Roughly, the plot is pretty accurate down there in oil country, where you look out. Like if you've been to that part of Texas and you look to your left and your right going down Highway 10, it's flat. There isn't much out there, and you see derrick after derrick after derrick. And this is, you know, like if the kids basically know that before they slip into adulthood, this is their one shot to become local heroes, if not break out.
Yeah,
it's
the culture,
local culture,
and
it's,
you know,
everything. Everything to them.
I used to say, and ignorantly, I would add, that Ohio was the best football state, you know, because I played. Why? Because I was an Ohio football kid in rural Ohio.
And it's kind of true. We are a big
but
football
Texas,
state. But Texas.
Texas is a whole different
it's
universe.
It's a different
man.
Deal.
It is a different deal. I've talked to people from down there, and it's it's a different universe down there. And so we'll see. I mean, I am cautiously optimistic, but Arch Manning has got a little bit more experience because he played against us last year in a playoff game. We got our boy Julian Sain, or maybe Keenholz, coming in sort of rough and fresh.
Yeah.
Untested, maybe is the right word. But we still got a lot of
this
weapons.
Is a rebuilding year for the Buckeyes. There's no question about it.
But it's not without tools. I mean, we got a lot of people. So anyway, we'll let the sports guys comment on that. One more sports thing in Ohio. I admit, and the jury's still out, I was a little skeptical of the Shedeur Sanders draft by Cleveland last year.
Oh.
Deion's kid.
Yeah.
But he's lighting it up in preseason, though.
Yeah.
So he's so far so good with Sanders. We'll watch it. I'm still a Browns fan, even though they never win. But anyway,
well, that the quarterback, I don't even want to use his name, but I mean, he was a disaster. That was a terrible pick. You know, it, in my opinion, they should have kept old what's his face that went down south, and he ended up having a couple of really great seasons, and they should not have gotten rid of him.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake.
Cleveland makes perennial mistakes.
Perennial,
it seems. But anyway, we'll watch. Cleveland, I'm optimistic for the Browns. I am certainly hopeful and optimistic for the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
And that's Ohio sport, which is great. So Ohio makes it big again.
I'm going to talk a little financial thing here. There's a lot of news out of China right now. I mean, they have this, I can't pronounce the word, but so I'll just call it the chicky virus. They've got some kind of crazy virus.
Of course.
That's, you know, the next big COVID thing or whatever you want to call it. And it's supposed to be very lethal and all that stuff. So they've gone, you know, full fascist, just like they did during COVID, where they were welding people into their apartments, welding, you know, metal doors shut so that nobody could leave their apartment and therefore, you know, in their mind, not spread the virus. They're demanding everybody in China get blood tested. They're just doing all this crazy stuff. And now they're having protests over some video of a 14-year-old girl getting bullied. And there's open protests. And they're shutting down social media film of the police doing their heavy-handed reaction to these parents that are coming out and saying the government's not doing enough to restrain bullying by kids in schools. And this girl who I think her parents are deaf and she's, you know, poor. There's video of her being kicked and beaten and pummeled, and the school system and the police didn't want to do anything about it. They're like, well, we don't really care about girls, or we don't really care about this kind of violence. Like, you know, if you're not violent against the government, basically we don't care what you do. You're just people and it doesn't matter. Well, these people took to the streets, and the police have been, you know, knocking heads. And all of that now, unlike in America, where we still have some freedom of speech, they don't have any.
Well, this is, you know, careful what you're trying to do here. You want to create we did this during COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
And fortunately, we woke up and pumped the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
But
After two years,
and I was railing against this, and not to brag, but it's like there were a lot. I wasn't the only one. There were a lot of us railing against this, being shouted down, and saying all the peer pressure to go protect the world.
Well, and they're
from
deplatforming
COVID.
People. And, you know, certain doctors like Dr. Bhattacharya, who's now like head of the CDC, and you know, a lot of these doctors. A lot of these doctors that were trying to advise Trump against some of these policies, and then Biden just went full bore.
Yeah.
They were deplatformed. They were not even allowed to express their medical professional opinions.
Yeah, it just is.
It was crazy.
It is lunacy, medical lunacy.
Medical, Scott Power, that was his name. So at any rate, the other big story out of China that I think is it's actually out of the U.S., but how we're handling. So we all know of situations where China has either done aggressive pricing or even has done loss leader pricing in order to destroy an American industry and more or less take it over. And they've done that, for example, in the tool business. So if you buy a Mac or a Snap-on tool these days, odds are, or even like it used to be a great brand like Crescent Wrenches. Mm-hmm. If you buy that at Ace Hardware, look at the package, and most of these tools now, even by high-end American tool sellers, those tools are being made in China by and large. And they have just taken over, you know, like Craftsman and all these brands are now Chinese. So at any rate, well, Trump has kind of flipped the script. So China's military, you know, which obviously is an adversary, they need these chips. They need these computer chips, right? So instead of denying them any chips, what the Trump administration has decided to do is go ahead and sell the Chinese military chips in order to not force them to start their own domestic production of chips. So what's happening is they've approved, like NVIDIA and AMD, they're allowed to sell to the Chinese, the Chi-Com government, which is going to give these chips right to their tanks and airplanes and their boats and whatever they're going to use these chips in. We know that. And people were like, well, why would you sell chips that are going to go to the... Well, because we don't want them to develop a domestic chip production industry. And what Trump has told NVIDIA and AMD, they have to give 15% of the sales money to the U.S. government. If you will, it's like a reverse tariff in a way. Or you could say it's a pre-sale tariff. So we will be getting money into the U.S. Treasury. We will also be selling them just enough chips, and not the most latest and most sophisticated chips, by the way, but like mainstream chips that will then, they won't have a need to produce on their own. So in a way, we are keeping our edge, or at least a strategy is to keep America in front on the chip making business, which is pretty sophisticated, pretty smart. We are doing now to the Chinese what they used to do to us. Yeah. So I think it's brilliant.
Well, with that, I think we've covered what we can cover.
Yeah.
What's good and bad in your life, Norm?
At the end, I want to promote a show, Steve. So, when we do this, maybe we can promote one of our future shows. The losers to me of the week are the people, you know, the in a way, it's a funny story, but I'm glad it's happening. So we have this thing now that's going on where these comics, at late night comics, who haven't been funny in like 10 years. Like it's just been, they've alienated half the country, Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel. They have just, like, it's just anti-mainstream humor, like every night, like making fun of people that don't want their kids to use, common bathrooms with adult men. And things like, you know, and girls having to have boys on their team, like they make fun of the mainstream culture, and you know, obviously Trump also, and so the rest of us are just not watching them, and they're losing their jobs now.
Yep.
And Jimmy Kimmel says he got Italian citizenship. He's so afraid that Trump is going to put him in prison. This is the kind of, you know,
it's such nonsense.
Yeah, this is the kind of crack.
When's the last time that happened?
Yeah, right. This is the kind of crack eye he's on. That he's
it's theater.
It's theater. So, I love the fact that finally Paramount is looking at the sheer numbers. Why are we paying Steve Colbert $40 million a year?
Well, look, they can if they want.
But he's not funny.
But he's not
making
money.
And he has no audience.
He's lost $10 million a year for how long? I don't know. Whatever it is. So.
And my winners once again. And I hate to say, like Steve said, he told you so about COVID. I'm going to say I told you so about the tariffs. So, okay, we've got tariffs. But they weren't tariffs just designed to bring in money. They were tariffs, as I said, back when they were implemented in February of this year. They were mainly designed to put us on an equal footing in terms of competition. And in spite of that, the winners the last couple months have been investors. I mean, check out your 401ks, people. I'm sorry if you sold your stocks because you missed out on a huge boom. And, you know, yeah, there'll be a correction at some point. But, like, the stock market's been at all-time highs. Under all of this concern and worry about how the tariffs were going to crash the economy, it hasn't happened. And, in fact, investors are making a fortune right now.
Well, so for another day, we'll give another side of that coin. I'm not totally disagreeing with you, but there's a little bit of a pushback.
I know.
So
I know.
Anyway,
yep.
My good and bad. I've covered some of this before, and I love to do this. I love when the same topic provides both good and both bad.
Yes.
So here's the bad. My son, as I am a proud father, has signed up, and he is now in basic training for the Army. And prior to that, he graduated from, I'm going to call it out, Upper Arlington High School. And at the graduation, there was not a peep about the military, the kids who were joining the military. There's all sorts of fanfare about those going to college. There's fanfare about doing this and that and the other. But
captain of the football team, you know, like all that.
Yeah, but there was like a little, and even the symbol next to the name was, it was sort of a little bit degrading. I mean, it just is, it is so, anyway,
yeah.
We got the yearbook. So my wife bought the yearbook for the kid, and not a mention in a yearbook about anybody. Now, there's a club for everything in the Upper Arlington yearbook. Apparently, you can just create a club. So there's clubs. For, I mean, there's 50 yeah. clubs, and they're all referenced in the yearbook, and there's like five kids in each club.
Yeah.
And it's absurd. It's yeah. totally absurd.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what the clubs are. I'm not even going to go through the names. You can imagine what they are,
sure.
but not a peep about them. That's the bad. Here's the good. He's a...
Not a peep about serving your country.
Right.
That's what Steve's saying.
Right.
You got to be kidding me.
Now, the good is that military enlistment is up significantly.
Yes, it is.
That my son is doing well with his others in boot camp and having a great experience. I'm watching in this short amount of time, in the little communication I have with him, him turn into a responsible young man.
Yeah.
So
he's a great, off. He's a great,
hats
man.
Off to
great
the U.S. kid. Military, and hats off yeah. to those who volunteered, hats off to who are serving now. I never did. And, I am very thankful that you did and you are. So that's my good.
Yeah. Great. Kid.
All right. We got a show coming up. I think everybody will be interested in.
Yeah. So on August this month, on the 26th, we're having a military historian, local guy, who is a legend with the U.S. Marine Corps and also with the Columbus Police Department. So he retired with great honors from both. He was a sergeant in both, not an officer, but a sergeant. So he's a regular middle-class blue-collar guy named Stephen Walter, and he wants to come in. He's done a really deep dive into our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the violence surrounding that, in particular the Abbey Gate attack, which killed over 200 people,
mm-hmm.
and I think 13, I'm pretty sure of the number, 13 American service people, men and women, and I believe one was from Ohio. A young lady, I think, was one of the service members who was killed that was from Ohio. But at any rate, he wants to go through the details of that, and as you know, that is all wrapped up into that abandonment of Bagram Air Force Base over there in Afghanistan, where we turned over billions of yeah. of materiel, weaponry.
Again, we have lived in our time through some of the greatest scandals, I think, that history will recognize. But that's looking forward. It's going to be a great show, great
be
guest.
A great show.
CommonSenseOhioShow.com. If you got a comment, you got a question, you got a topic you want us to cover, you can give it to us there. You can leave us a comment in the media. Like I have always said, you want to debate Norm, then have at it. Shoot us a question, and if you got the chops, maybe we'll get you right here at the table. Fortunately, we are brought here week in and week out by Harper Plus Accounting. My accountant could be yours. Signing off right from the middle. Till next time.